Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Upgrade your kitchen today with Clearview Cabinetry. We offer a great selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft closed doors and drawers and with cabinet accessories to match your unique style. View our selection of Clearview Cabinetry on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to the first Thought Police of the new year, 2024, hard to believe. Kevin's here. Kevin, very good afternoon to you.
A very happy new year, Mike, although we wished each other a happy new year.
We did do that.
Almost on the strike of 12,
yes.
Midnight.
Well, in fact, on the strike of 12 midnight.
On the 12, yeah.
Several hours thereafter. Yeah. But I should say as well, apologies still for my slightly dodgy sounding throat. Which I had the last time we did a podcast, which was just before Christmas,
yeah.
Because I've now had it for about 2 weeks.
What do they say it is?
They think it's laryngitis, basically, which is effectively a virus,
yeah.
Which you can't treat.
Just got to wait.
Just got to wait it out. There's nothing you can really take for it. I went to see a doctor, you know, last week, and she was just like, I've had a look, there's no bacterial problem, there's no infection. You just need to rest your voice. And I went, well, I can't rest my fucking voice because that's what I do for a living.
You got a great job for like, resting your voice.
And she's like, well, can you rest your voice until you go back to work? And I said, well, I can try, but it's not very easy. You know, I'm not known for being quiet, shy and reserved. That's
yeah,
sort of
well,
thing.
The one good thing you've got is you're not on Jeffrey Epstein's list of shame.
Well,
although
not
a lot
so
of
far.
People in America are pissed off that they're not on
I know.
Because it's like, if you're not on Epstein's list, you're nobody.
Because also, I think the problem that people have with this list is they assume, like the usual hysterical Twitter maniacs, that if you're on this list, you must be a paedophile. Actually, no, you might be on the list for all sorts of reasons. Because
yeah.
One of the things that Jeffrey Epstein did, and this is like, you might remember this old movie, The Butterfly Collector. He collected people.
Yeah.
His whole fucking way of life was about collecting powerful people, interesting people, so that he could use them in some way for his own benefit, right?
Yeah. I think that in many ways, Jeffrey Epstein was a brilliant man. He was apparently extremely good at financing.
Yeah.
The reason he managed to gather around him this increasing coterie of the rich, famous and powerful was that he would get into their company, organise meeting them and say, you know, you're worth 20 million, give it to me, I'll turn it into 40 million tomorrow.
Right.
And he'd go off and do it and make friends for life.
I mean, there are an awful lot of questions about how he got his money originally, because apparently
kind of weird,
when
it?
He worked at Bear Stearns, he basically ripped off a load of people, including some of the people who worked there, and he was very good at kind of, but he was like many of these kind of psychopaths, he was very good at taking over somebody, making them trust him, letting them give him a load of money, and off he went, and suddenly he became a very powerful guy. But it also shows you, I think, how fucking shallow and sorrowful some of these famous people are, you know, like the likes of Bill Clinton and lots of politicians who love to be with rich people,
yeah.
Who love to spend time with rich people. Oh, if you've got a private jet, great. I mean, look at Prince Harry. Prince Harry would love anyone with a private jet if they'd lend it to him.
Yeah, and of course, his uncle, Prince Andrew, very much liked a private jet when it was offered to him, especially by Jeffrey Epstein.
Mm.
And the point about this list that has been released, it's been around since 2014, sealed.
Yes.
Courtroom sealed, unsealed now. The point about it is people say, oh, well, Prince Andrew will be on it, but it won't take the story on. Well, it fucking does.
Yeah.
Because you've got someone called Jane Doe 3.
Yes.
Who says that Prince Andrew had sex with her in three different places around the world,
right.
When she was underage. That takes it on.
Doesn't that mean that she, that person, though, could be Virginia Giuffre?
Well, very much so. That's what people are speculating, but you can't sort of say it definitively.
Yeah.
And, of course, the whole point about underage sex is, with reference to Prince Andrew, and Virginia Giuffre was the age of consent thing
was
always a grey area, because the age of consent in London is 16. Yeah. The age of consent, I think, in New York is 17.
Well, it's
the
18,
age
of consent. I think it's 18.
Is it 18? Yeah, I think so. Well, that's why it's Florida is 17. In other words, it never quite was definitively said that he had sex with an underage girl. Right. Now, Jane Doe 3, who a lot of people are thinking is Virginia Giuffre, says, I was underage when he had sex with me in three different places.
Right. And I think that would be not a big surprise to anyone who's followed the Prince Andrew story. I mean, it's very difficult to defend Prince Andrew, but I have had already several conversations with people going, he's a paedophile, he's a paedophile. I mean, I know that that's not something that you can defend him doing, and he shouldn't have done it if it turns out he did do it. But it doesn't make him a paedophile, in my view. But I mean, clearly, there's an awful lot of people who like shagging young women.
Yeah, well, Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton. There was a note on his file, if you like, at Jeffrey Epstein's office. Bill likes them young.
Right.
Simple as that.
Right.
And you're right. I mean, far be it from us to knock down what is a really, journalistically speaking, a great story.
Mm-hmm.
But just because you're on that list doesn't mean to say you were fucking 12-year-old girls by any means.
No.
A lot of people on that list would have maybe taken an invitation from him to get on his plane and go to that island, have some nice dinner, swim in the sea and all that.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean you're guilty.
Well, I mean, I was listening to your show earlier today. Yeah. People talk about philanthropy and a lot of the things that Bill Clinton and he did together. Yeah. You know, get yourself a foundation, find yourself a wealthy benefactor, get on a private jet, go to Africa, save some lives, have some pictures taken, Bob's your uncle, and later you get accused of being a paedophile.
Yeah, and these are the people, these kind of Jeffrey Epstein type characters, these are the people who believe that charity must not only be done, it must be seen to be done. So they're very noisy about it. And as I said on Talk TV earlier this week, you know, like you, I've got a lot of experience in journalism. One thing I've fucking learned over the decades is this. Never trust someone who's noisy about charity. Never, ever trust them.
Right. And also, in any situation like that, when you've got very wealthy people, there's always something seedy going on.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever met anybody who's been incredibly wealthy who hasn't had something slightly iffy going on about them, you know, because they can have anything they want. You know, I once went and did a story in Memphis with this guy who was a self-made millionaire, had his own private jet, funnily enough, and it was somewhere down near Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided to start up this new, what he thought was going to be the new craze. And it was basically horses with automated robot jockeys. And so he built this entire sort of he built this entire
gap in the market,
mini stadium. Well, you know how in America horse race it's quite hard
to
do.
I get that.
And so he built this whole fucking business, right? And he was loaded beyond. I can't remember where he got his money from. But it was quite fun. I mean, we went there and in loads of crowds of people and these little mini horses running around.
Okay.
And you can control the jockey because it was like a robot which was controlling the horse. Now we went and did the story. I decided to go back to New York. And the photographer I was with said, he wants us to go. He's going on a jolly down to New Orleans. He's offering to take us. And I said, what do you mean? He went, well, he wants us basically to come in his private jet. He's going to hire a few hookers and we're all going to go on a fucking long weekend down to New Orleans. What do you think? You fancy it? And I went, no, actually.
Yeah.
But I thought about it for a minute.
That way danger lies.
Exactly right. And I thought, this is how these guys do it. Because then suddenly you're in their debt. Suddenly you're a friendly fucking guy in the media. Suddenly they want something. Suddenly something happens. You know, that's how it works.
And the only
way to stay away from it is to not have anything to fucking do with them.
And was the photographer someone who used the word cocksucker a lot by any chance?
It was him, and he didn't go either in the end.
much to his great regret knowing him. We won't name him.
No, that's because they weren't offering him any drugs.
What I was saying
that
earlier about...
That sealed the deal.
So who's the noisiest person about charity you ever heard? I'll tell you, his name was Jimmy Savile.
Yes,
see what I'm saying?
Exactly right.
And every time you tried to... I know this from being on various papers on Fleet Street. Every time... you know, a lot of newspapers knew about this guy.
Yeah.
They didn't realise quite the extent of Savile's crimes. But they, you know, every fucking couple of weeks, Savile would crop up. He's done this, he's done this. And every time you went to Savile's people and said, we've got this scandal story, the lawyers would come back saying, oh, please, you can't publish this story because A, it's not true, that was a lie, and B, you'll ruin Mr. Savile's charity work. They use it as a fucking defence.
And he had very good lawyers. And the problem, and you'll have known this as I did, you know, I came across several Jimmy Savile stories, and the problem was the people telling the stories were always pretty much vulnerable people, whether they were young women or families who had young women and young boys who'd been assaulted by them. And so they weren't always very credible witnesses. And you knew that if you ended up going to court, they'd be fucking destroyed. And that was why newspapers, to a large extent, backed off, because they went, you know, we can't prove it. It's his word against theirs. He's a national icon, you know, friends in high places and all that. How the fuck are we going to win this?
No, exactly. And here's another thing that, that I've been talking about on this story, and you'll recognise it. So a lot of people on this side of the Atlantic, with Jeffrey Epstein and all that, they're going, look at this fucking list. 950 pages.
Yeah.
It's been around, you know, okay, it's been sealed for the public, but the FBI could have got it. It's been there since 2014, and the FBI have done the square root of fuck all, apart from getting Ghislaine Maxwell in the shit. She clearly fully deserved it.
Yeah.
But all the other rich and powerful people on that list, why did the FBI not touch them? Because in America, they respect wealth and power. If you've made $1 billion, they don't really care how you fucking made it. They go, well, that guy has to be respected. So it's about, so it, on this side of the Atlantic, on in Britain, we love to fucking kick rich people off their pedestals. On in America, they don't. They just don't.
But it's also not just about that. I think the FBI probably were a little bit frightened of some of these people too, because again, if they're very wealthy and very powerful, they've got very rich friends. And if you're an FBI investigator, you can get your fucking job taken off you if you're investigating the wrong person. And I think there's a bit of that going on as well.
Absolutely. I mean, people make the... You and I, people like you and I know this, but people make the mistake of thinking because we speak the same language and because culturally there are lots of different things in which we're pretty much the same, that we're exactly the same as Americans. We're fucking not.
No.
There's a big difference.
No. So what do you think happens now then? Because all of these names, people will pore over them. I mean, according to the stuff I'm reading literally right now in front of me, loads and loads of these well-known figures' names are going to come out. There's still some which are redacted, which are going to come out, I think, on the 22nd of January or something like that. But there's high-profile names which include Prince Andrew, Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, Al Gore, Kevin Spacey, Stephen Hawking, all included in evidence filings. Donald Trump, funnily enough, has already been more or less cleared.
This list kind of exonerates
that he didn't really do anything at all. But also Leonardo DiCaprio, Cate Blanchett, Cameron Diaz, Bruce Willis, Naomi Campbell... none have been accused of any involvement, but they just like hanging around, don't they, with rich people.
Yeah, that's what happens. This is the rich person's world, you know. They're all flying around with each other, going to flash restaurants, flash hotels, private jets. This is what happens behind the scenes. And people like Jeffrey Epstein, they kind of, what's the word, glorify themselves by getting to hang around with Leonardo DiCaprio, Prince Andrew, Bill Clinton. That's what he did. And he did it, you know, obviously he's a piece of shit, but he did that with consummate skill.
But Wall Street was always like that. You know, my sister worked at Wall Street for a long time, and they used to have this thing every year called the Robin Hood Dinner, which was basically a big charitable event, always held in a massive, massive ballroom in a New York hotel. And they would get people like The Who, Elton John, fucking U2 to play at this do, which was a black tie dinner, which you couldn't buy a ticket for. You only had to be a member of one of the big Wall Street firms. And they would spend absolutely millions and millions of dollars. And they would invite celebrities who would sit at the tables. They would all go happily. God knows what fucking went on.
And don't forget, you know, that's the thing about all these superstars. I mean, these superstar pop singers and that and rock band. I mean, they do weddings.
Yeah.
If you give them a couple of million, they'll turn up.
Well, and they'll get Saudis all, you know, get you over there, won't they? I mean, famously, Rod Stewart said he wouldn't do it. There's so many of them, like Beyonce, remember, got into trouble for going to do a show in Qatar. And all of her gay supporters were like, oh, that's a bit masked. I thought he supported LGBT. Until I got offered $2 million for a 2-hour concert.
Just put that on the back burner for now. I'll just take the fucking money and run.
A bit like Jordan Henderson. Well, I'll see what I can do about the rainbow laces.
Well,
I'm going to go play in Saudi Arabia for £700,000 a week.
Well, should we talk about the most ludicrous fucking story I've ever heard? Well, that's my exaggeration, but this is
today.
This is up there. Fucking Metropolitan Police, bunch of useless pricks, are officially investigating war crimes in Gaza.
Why?
They put posters all over airports. Have you seen anything going on in Gaza? What the fuck has
has it got to do with them?
No, absolutely fuck all. Presumably, they're people who advise them on such matters as how not to arrest anyone who's shouting from the river to the sea, because it's okay.
Yeah.
And also, Islamic Jihad doesn't necessarily mean a holy war. It must be the same people presumably saying to them, oh, you should kind of try and get some people coming out of Gaza so we can prosecute some Israelis.
Yeah, but it's a fucking good point you're making there, Mike, because the actual investigation is into, not into war crimes in Gaza, it's into Israeli war crimes. They're not investigating potential war crimes by Palestinians and never will, because they're the left-wing woke police who love Palestine and hate Israel.
Yes.
That's what left-wingers in this country do.
Meanwhile, here's what they're doing. You might remember over Christmas Eve, in fact, there's an MP called Mike Freer, who I think is an MP somewhere up near North Finchley.
Uh-huh.
He had part of his home set on fire because he's been very outspoken about Israel and defending Israel's attacks on Gaza and attacks on Hamas. They've also arrested these people for a similar activity at a restaurant on the same night, which was a restaurant which was also targeted because it was run by Israelis. But what they've said is, we are aware of local community concern about the incident, but we have carefully assessed the evidence and we can confirm it is not being treated as a hate crime. Despite the fact that the targets of both of these incidents were clearly targeted because of their connections to Jews.
Fucking hell.
So they're looking for fucking Israeli war criminals, but in North Finchley, they're not looking for people who are attacking Jewish people.
But apparently, Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu has been fairly relaxed about his country, his predicament, etc., etc. But now that he's heard that the Met Police is on the case, he's shitting himself.
Oh, yeah. Well, as I said to you earlier in the day, the only thing there is, imagine these fat blobs turning up with their high-vis vests going, all right, what's going on here then? No, well, come on, there's a fucking missile coming out.
Hello, we
can do that missile for
breaking the speed. What's all this suicide bombing going on here then? I said this morning, you know, like imagine a couple of cops, old colleagues meeting. Where are you working now then? I'm on the Gaza squad. Fucking idiots.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, don't worry about crime back here. London's completely cured.
London's fine. I mean, this is why on New Year's Eve, Sadiq Khan was full of the joys of speaking about how brilliant the fireworks were, but he neglected to mention the fact that a kid, for the first time on the first day of the fucking New Year, has been stabbed to death in Primrose Hill, which is a pretty nice area, by the way. I used to live there.
It's just down the road from where I go there all the time.
Yeah.
Been to the fireworks. The history of that park is, they used to have their own display on a New Year. Then they sort of stopped that because they turned it into an observation point.
Where, because it's like one of the highest.
You can see
London,
brilliant. You can see the fireworks in central London brilliantly, almost better than if you're there.
Yeah.
And then there was so many crowds there, so much crowd trouble, that they closed the park entirely.
Right.
Now they've reopened it. Residents have been writing to Royal Parks and the police saying something's going to fucking happen here unless nothing happened until that.
Because there's some quite nasty little fucking council estates around there as well.
Yeah, but people come from all around. Yeah, yeah. And that poor kid died. Now something will fucking happen, I'll tell you.
Well, I bet. Well, they'll probably just shut the park, won't they?
They did before and then mysteriously reopened it. Mm. But,
I mean, still, we're waiting for
Sadiq Khan. What an irony, as you say. What an irony.
Yeah, we're still waiting for Sadiq Khan to say anything about it. His big announcement was that he's hoping to make London a Wi-Fi zone where you can just get Wi-Fi wherever you go.
Brilliant.
So you get your phone out.
I'm not the
and just as you get it out to get your free Wi-Fi, you could be stabbed and have your phone nicked. And that'll be the end of you.
Exactly.
You know? It's a fucking point. It's priorities. Absolute twat.
Fucking. The mayor of London presents the most dangerous city in the world. Yeah. Thanks, Sadiq.
Come here at your peril. If you can survive a week walking the streets, good luck to you. You win a special prize.
As was quite rightly said, to be serious about this, what I despise about Sadiq Khan is, you know, he's just this sort of... all he does is appeal to the people who are going to vote
for him.
He's got an inbuilt majority in London because, contrary to appearances, most people in London are poor, and this is one of the worst places in the world to be if you're poor.
Yeah.
He just speaks for them and just say, come on, I'll make your life better. He doesn't make their life better, but they all vote for him because he's Labour.
Yeah, exactly. Unbelievable. Speaking of Labour, it can't have escaped your notice that we've got a new voice on the political scene. His name is Sir Keir Starmer. And this week he has unveiled his new plan.
Now,
I'm hoping you might be able to explain what it
is. Fucking speak.
Because I don't know what the fuck it is. But here's what he says. This year offers us the chance to change Britain's course. The future of Britain is in your hands. The power of the vote is in your control. And Labour will fight every day to earn it.
What's that mean?
What does that mean?
It was a meaningless speech. They called it Keir Starmer's message of hope.
Yeah.
Guess what the message of hope was?
What?
He actually
said, I hope
said,
I get elected.
Yeah. Exactly. I hope you're stupid enough to elect me. Yeah, his message of hope was this. Quite rightly and probably politically dangerously, he said in this speech, look, the problem in this country is it's not that people necessarily are disaffected with the Tories or anyone. They're disaffected, disillusioned with Westminster politics in general. And then he said Labour can offer a flicker of hope to make this...
A flicker of hope.
Right. Flicker of hope.
Brilliant. Before we carry on, we're just going to take a little pause so we can have a word from our friends at AG1, who are sponsoring this podcast. Hey, Kev, have you heard about AG1? It's a brand new way to achieve wellness, and it's really simple to use. And after the Christmas and New Year we've had... might just be the ticket. AG1 is a daily nutrition supplement and it's empowering people to take ownership of their health. It's designed by scientists and it's a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high quality ingredients. Just one scoop, once a day, one glass of water. It all takes less than a minute and the people at AG1 can help you with just how to get it working for you. It takes seconds to mix each morning, but it helps to support your brain, your heart, your energy, and even your immunity health as well. And if that's not a good New Year resolution, I don't know what is. I've already introduced my family to it and they're loving it. It improves your focus when you've got a lot on, and the B vitamin supports sustained energy throughout the day without the caffeine crash you get from coffee. AG1 is also your daily dose of vitamin C, zinc, functional mushrooms, and more to support overall immune health. You'll find your mood balance improves and your stress levels are more manageable too. And you know that makes sense. I know you're going to try it out at home too, Kevin. In your case, it's going to be great because it's going to be good for your hair, for your nails, your skin, and even for that heart of yours, which needs a little bit of help. And also, you never know, your other half might appreciate you better too. And in case you're wondering, we can tell you that AG1 is made from the highest quality ingredients under the strictest manufacturing standards, and it's certified for sports use as well because it's been tested for over 280 banned substances. That's right. So in sport, you don't have to worry about using something that's going to get you into some kind of trouble. It's an effortless daily habit that you'll really thank yourself for getting involved in. And you can do it here, of course, with the Thought Police, because you know we're always here to help. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Here's what you do. You go to drinkag1.com/thoughtpolice. That's drinkag1.com/thoughtpolice. You know it makes sense. Check it out. Yeah, so luckily, not only Sir Keir Starmer's got a plan, but old Rishi says he's not going to have an election until the autumn, right?
It's going to be October, would be my bet.
Yes.
As I think we,
something to look forward to.
I mean, the weird thing is we have a deal with America. In so as far as we can't, we neither of us will stage an election at the same time. So the American presidential election is in November.
Right.
So we are contractually required not to have our election in November. Rishi won't put it in December. He's got to have it by January. He won't do it in January.
It's too cold in December.
He can't. He won't. Well, he won't want to do it in December because he won't want to fuck people's Christmas up because that could be a vote loser.
Yeah, right.
So my bet will be October.
October. Yeah, definitely. I don't see why he wants to have an election at all. I'm surprised he hasn't tried to find some way out of it.
I was doing a programme here, you know, the talk at Talk TV, there was a big debate. So all the palace were required to say, well, when do you think the
election
will be? So I defended, I said, it'll be November. He said, it can't be November. All right, October, how's that?
But, I mean, this is the time, isn't it, when everybody and his uncle gets asked the same question. When do you think it will be? It doesn't matter when you think it will be.
Yeah.
It'll fucking be when it is.
But it can't be November, so my bet will be October. What's her name? Emily Thornberry was going around here. Everybody knows it's an open secret. There's going to be a spring election.
No,
there isn't, Emily. It's not a fucking open secret because it ain't going to happen in a month. the fucking Sundays.
Well, that's something else that she's got massively wrong.
Yeah.
She hasn't got anything right
well,
for
that's
a long
her
time.
Hobby, isn't it?
Yeah,
getting
absolutely.
Things massively wrong.
Absolutely. But what I've actually enjoyed watching over the last couple of days has been Richard Tice suddenly being embraced by mainstream media. Suddenly they're all interviewing him. You know, he had a big piece of The Times the other day. BBC are talking to him now. You know, and Tice must be loving it. Yeah. You know, he used to work with us. He now works elsewhere. But, I mean, I think he's going to be quite an interesting character to watch in this next sort of 6 to 9 months.
I think there's two things to watch about this election when it happens. So the real winner will be people who don't turn up. The turnout
yes.
is going to be the story.
Right. None of the above.
I think it'll be a really tiny turnout. Starmer is only going to get elected by default.
Not I bet it's a tiny fucking majority
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, but not because anyone gives a fuck about Keir Starmer, yeah. but they've had enough of the useless Tories.
Yeah. Who basically can't get anything right.
The other story will be the percentage of the poll that Reform UK get,
yeah.
which will be... So they're already at 10% and
yeah.
rising.
Right.
I think it was this time last year, only about 5%. Mm. But because of the way our electoral system is set up, it's pretty unlikely they'll take any seats.
They probably won't. But the
UKIP
is,
story all over again, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but the other thing is that every time that they were trailing or polling at sort of 10%, then there'd be a by-election. They'd only get about 3%. So we'll see what happens. But it'll be quite good fun to watch anyway.
And what the Tories are terrified of, I mean, they're pretty terrified about Reform UK generally because
yeah.
Richard Tice, friend of ours, by the way, he said, I'm not going to do a Farage, because remember Farage did a deal with Cameron before, in which he didn't field seats.
They're all terrified
candidates.
Of Farage, aren't they?
Yeah, well, that's the point. So they say that if Farage re-enters the fray, front line, campaigning for Reform UK, and by the way, he's the president of Reform UK, but he doesn't want to do front line stuff, that 10% they're tipped to get will go up to 14%, and may even tip them into getting a couple of seats here and there, and that will be very interesting, and I think I can exclusively reveal, because people say, well, will he come back? Has he got the energy or the... he's coming back.
Yeah.
He's coming back. I'll tell you, I know.
Yeah. I think he will want to do something. Mm. But the only thing that I know about Nigel, I don't know him as well as I used to of late, but I mean, he was quite, I think, wary of the way that people actually did attack him in the street. Because they did, you know, because some of these nutty fucking lefties,
the
guy threw the milkshake on him. But
aside
from that, people make jokes about chucking battery acid.
That
I mean, Joe Brand, yeah. He's a reviled figure by these fucking lefties. Who would not like to see him getting into any kind of position of power. And I think he worries about that.
Yeah.
He probably should.
He's a reviled figure by people who literally do not understand that he speaks for millions of people in this fucking country. Mm. He's popular.
Right.
Look, he came third in I'm a Celeb.
Yeah.
You know, Labour's ever...
And he's a decent guy.
Yeah, and when Labour say, well, that's not that good, he could have come first.
Yeah.
It's not bad to come third. It proves he's popular.
Well, he made the final of the fucking show.
Fucking right.
Which is
fucking
the point.
Right.
But all of these people who can't stand anyone who disagrees with them, you know, we get to take you now back to the junior doctors who have now become so reviled in this country because they are so fucking left-wing and so anti-Tory that this strike that they're having has got nothing to do with fucking the NHS
fucking
everything to do with them just being, but we're worth more money than we are being paid. And it's like, we'll go and do a different job then.
Yeah,
if you want more money.
If you don't give us more money, we'll all go to Australia. Well, fuck off there,
yeah, exactly.
man, you cunts.
Where, Australia, where, by the way, they have an insurance-based health system, which is nothing like the NHS. So if they're sort of, you know, supposedly ideologically against selling off the NHS, why would they go to a place where they've already sold it?
Think about it, Mike. So you've got, by the way, the junior doctors in Scotland have already settled for 12%.
Yeah. Right.
Because consultants have settled for just under 13%.
Yeah.
The nurses have settled for 5% plus a 1,500 one-off payment.
Yeah.
So the only people left in the medical arena who are still on strike are these cunt junior doctors who are demanding 35%.
Right.
And when they won't budge, they'll never get it. But suppose they did get 35%, or suppose the government gives them, I don't know, 20 or 15.
Well, they've already given
then
them.
All the others...
They've
are
already given them around about 10.
Yeah.
Which they've already got as a pay rise.
But
right?
you see what I mean? But if they give them any more... If they gave them 35, the fucking consultants, the nurses, and the junior doctors in Scotland, they'd all come out again.
Yeah.
They go, well, you're giving them 35.
Yeah.
What about us?
Of course they would.
They're never getting it, but they don't care.
care. Mm. This is nothing to do with them wanting more money. This is political. They want to fucking destabilise the Tories and get their beloved Labour losers.
And they've also now fucking refused 20 different requests to go back to work in certain hospitals, particularly in London, where they're struggling with the A&E departments. They're begging them, where they're struggling with the cancer departments. They said that those would not be affected, but they are being affected. Yeah. And thousands of people are not being able to go to the fucking doctor or go to the hospital because these fucking selfish wankers are not interested in helping anyone.
Yeah, do you know what those fuckers are doing? They're killing patients. It's as simple as that. Well, they are. People are dying because of this strike.
Yeah.
And the hospitals, as you quite rightly say earlier this week, I mean, this is a sort of a heartbreak story.
Yeah.
The hospitals said, lots of hospitals said to the BMA, please, can you just let some of them come back to work because people are dying. What did the BMA say? Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, they basically went, oh yeah, but you're not really trying to hire other
people.
It's
like, give us a 35% and we'll go back. So their bargaining chip is human lives. Yes. Isn't that special?
Isn't that special?
Bunch
and also,
of cunts.
There are these new entitled fuck-witted sort of 20-somethings who think, well, why should you get paid more than me? You're just a gobshite on the television. And I'm like, well, unfortunately, that's the way the world works. Yeah. You might as well say, why does fucking Ronaldo get more money than a doctor?
Yeah.
Because he fucking demands it and he deserves it because he commands that kind of salary. If you're a junior doctor, you don't know shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you do qualify to do a better job, you get well paid and they get 50, 60, 70,000 What the fuck's that to complain about?
And I'll tell you why I'm better paid than you, you little medical cunt, because I'm cleverer than you. Fucking wankers.
Oh, yeah,
isn't this idea?
No,
he's a doctor, he must be really brilliant.
But this is like all these fuckwits on Twitter who go, oh, but I trust them because he's got a degree.
Yeah!
He's got a degree, and he's a medical doctor, so he must be cleverer than you. I mean, you know, the absolute falsity of that kind
of nonsense is hilarious. Have you seen the junior doctor's spokesman guy?
Oh, yeah.
You know, his name's Dr. Ben Lawrence.
The four-eyed wanker.
Yeah, yeah. And have you seen it? It's like, what are you going to do after you leave school, Sonny? Yeah. No, he looks like he's about 9 years old.
This is the guy who bought for cash a £500,000 pad in Newham. Whose parents own multi-million pound company in which he has shares, and he actually got the gall to say that, you know, sometimes he and his colleagues struggle to eat.
Go fuck yourself.
They're just liars.
Hypocritical.
They're fucking liars.
And they're, you know, they get fucking good, but they turn around to the public, to the great British public, and they go, I mean, you know, all we get is 40,000 a year when we start.
Well, they don't even say that, though. What they say is, oh, I only get £15 an hour.
That's not true.
One, it's not true. Two, why don't you tell us the actual figure? They don't tell you the actual figure because it's quite high and it's higher than the average money that anybody gets. And they will all get, if they're working in London, they get a 5,000 fucking bump for having London waiting. They get paid extra money, double money if they work weekends, if they work bank holidays, if they work unsocial hours. They all go, oh, but we have to work antisocial hours. Yeah, and you get paid double for it. Lots of people work antisocial hours. You know, fuck you and fuck the BMA.
Fuck.
There's my fucking New Year
absolutely
message.
Absolutely, bloody good wankers. Message. Fuck you, junior doctors, and fuck you, the pompously named British Medical Association.
Yeah.
British Medical Association, my ass. It's the fucking left-wing doctors' shit union.
It's the British Marxist Association.
They're just a fucking bunch of lefties. That's all they are.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Absolutely right. Now, finally... should we talk football? Because
talk football. By the way,
you've been to a couple of decent Fulham games.
Fucking hell, man! Just before I saw you before New Year, Fulham beat Arsenal 2-1 at Craven Cottage. Yeah. Not only did we beat them, we pissed on them.
Right.
God knows why, but we did.
They've lost to West Ham and Fulham, right?
Yeah. So it's not looking good for them. But I think we should also. Pay tribute to Luke Littler.
Yes.
The 16-year-old sensation.
Yes.
He caught a lot of flack for being the oldest 16-year-old who ever lived.
Right.
But what an achievement, though.
And a fantastic kind of week that he's had. He's never going to forget it, is he? And I hope what happens is that he doesn't get forgotten, because I was saying this last night when I was on the air when he didn't win. Because quite often these things come and go, and then you forget about the guy who didn't win. You never remember who lost the cup final in 1973, you know what I mean? Yeah. You remember who fucking won it.
Yeah.
But I think he'll do all right, because he's got one of those characteristics.
Well, they say he'll make 40 million quid, he'll become the richest darts player ever. Right. He's 16, for fuck's sake.
Well, he won 200,000.
Yeah, he's won 200,000 already, and 16. He'll be the world champion maybe next year.
Well, he's going to be the face.
Certainly by the time
he's going to be the face of a pizza company in about 2 weeks' time, isn't he?
Yeah. You know. What's his fucking diet? Ham and egg, ham and bacon, ham and cheese omelette for breakfast.
pizza for lunch, Donna for dinner.
Well, he eats like every 16-year-old would eat if they didn't have their parents telling them what to eat.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have to listen to
the funniest thing about this, literally people are saying it's brilliant because darts has gained this whole new massive audience. By the way, darts is the second most
It's always had a massive audience. Sport, yeah, it's always had a massive audience. After
Premier League football in the world.
Yeah.
But anyway, people say it's great because Luke is encouraging a lot of kids to get away from their laptops and their computer games to play darts. I'm not sure that is like that great.
And drink pints. Right?
It's good to get the kids away from their video games,
I saw a great old bit of footage of Jockey Wilson and somebody else playing.
Jockey Wilson.
And as he was about to throw one of his darts, and the caption said, "It's always been a game for gentlemen," because he pulls a fag out of his top pocket, sticks it in his mouth, and the guy he's playing against lights it for him, and then he throws the dart with a lit cigarette in his hand. It's fucking brilliant.
Game for gentlemen. I mean, those guys, Jockey Wilson, they should get through 10 pints in a game.
Right.
But it's a great sport because it's
very British, like sort football. Of endeavour, isn't it?
Well, it's going global, but it's a working class sport.
Right. I mean is it's a British endeavour because it's kind of people for the sake of it, actually, for the event. They don't really care that Luke didn't.
The crowds are amazing.
The crowds dress up. They go there, have a party. I'm told it's wonderful. I mean, it doesn't really appeal to me, but loads of people love it, and they fucking...
And apparently... Well, I really fancy going. I've never been. It looks great.
Yeah.
Apparently at the semi-final, there were 7 Scooby-Doos.
Yeah.
Anyway, last year... This is what I love about darts and the incredible crowds. Is it is like so anti-woke.
Yes.
It's the last bastion of old-fashioned fuck-wokery Britain. And
there's nobody taking the fucking knee.
So last year, some bloke turned up at the fucking tournament with blackface on as Diane Abbott, wearing this jacket with "I am a fuckwit" written all over. You know, you just don't get that in tennis.
They probably wouldn't let you into fucking football dressed like that. Never mind fucking anything else.
Apparently, at this one last night, somebody turned up. There's this thing in football.
Yeah.
You know, so Ali Pally's in North London. Alexander Palace is in North London where the event is. So there's a lot of Spurs and Arsenal fans can go there. So somebody turned up with a fucking great banner saying, "North London is white." And guess what? Got the banner taken off.
Yeah, that might be
a push. But it was only a reference to Spurs playing in white.
Yes, of course. Absolutely right. Well, it could have been worse if it was Spurs. Well, anyway, that's the first Thought Police for the year. We have decided...
We're going to do a show, aren't we?
We're going to do a show. We're going to try and find a room at the end of January or early February. We'll have to try and figure out a date. But we're going to do a live show. It'll be in London, I'm afraid. But we will let you know. And if you're on Patreon, you'll find out how to get tickets before everybody else.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so definitely. We'll want to see you all
when we get back on
the stage.
Yeah, we get back on the stage.
Until then, you can go fuck yourselves, by the way.
Absolute bunch of fucking twats. See you later.
Cunts. We'll be right back.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.